From the KLYT Broadcast Studio, this is ABQ Connect. Your input on today's topic is important to us. Join in the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
All right. It's going to be a full hour today with Paul Gessing from the Rand Foundation. And actually, before we get to that, I do want to make sure you're aware of some of the opportunities you have to get out in the community and enjoy some events that are available to you, most of which are free or low cost. One of the ones that just kind of hit our sights today, it was a little late on this one, but we want to make sure you know about the Remembering the Jesus movie at Mosaic Music and Arts Cafe in Santa Fe. That's north of Cordova Road on Don Diego Avenue. This is happening tomorrow, late afternoon, evening. The doors open at 5:30. There'll be a book signing, book Seek Ye First, the Karen Lafferty story. You may remember back in the Maranathas, the song Seek Ye First in church, penned, taken from scripture, but the music penned by Karen Lafferty. And then Gary Cowan's going to be part of this event. Gary of the Phoenix Sunshine Band and a local pastor here in Albuquerque. Maranatha concert videos will be shown, and they'll actually have a prize for the best dressed representing the Jesus movement. So I'm kind of thinking the whole flowers and bell bottoms thing might go over real well. The challenge is for the people who were around then, as far as the guys, how many of them still have, the long hair? You might need to go out and get a wig to win that one. But there'll also be a surprise game tomorrow. It's a free event. Donations are welcome, benefiting YWAM Santa Fe. That's Youth with a Mission Santa Fe. And I'll have actually a phone number if you want details, but it's 505-690-5730. Let me give you that one more time. 505-690-5730. But it's at the Mosaic Music and Arts Cafe in Santa Fe, north of Cordova Road on Don Diego Avenue, tomorrow at 5:30 in the afternoon. Should be lots of fun. We'll have Karen Lafferty actually on the show tomorrow as our first segment, so we'll talk more about it then. But let's welcome Paul Gessing into studio. Paul, glad to see you, and I didn't have to wait a month this time to catch up with you.
No, we got to see each other a little bit at the recent Folds of Honor dinner and fundraising event. It was a very nice event and a great speaker, great cause, of course, and a great group of people, including yourself, to spend a Saturday night with.
And I'll tell you this, having done mobile DJ stuff back in the 80s, I did my share of, the banquet dinner, bad chicken.
Yep.
And they did a really nice job at Isleta Convention Center. It was tasty.
It was. It was very tasty.
So it was a pleasure to meet your family and others sitting at the media table. Folds of Honor, their eighth annual Patriot Dinner just a little while ago. But let's jump right into, you've got plenty to cover today, Paul, which, by the way, I want to make sure the listener knows. Heirsofenchantment.com is where you can go to find much of what we're going to talk about today. You can also go to the RioGrandeFoundation.org to find out more about the Rio Grande Foundation. I know we're going to get to the governor, Paul.
Yep.
I also want to make sure, these folks are putting on this conference, the Opportunity for All Kids Conference, New Mexico. This is kind of exciting. We've been kind of talking it up.
Yeah. It is a conference designed to inform New Mexicans and to create a conversation across the various groups involved in reforming New Mexico's education system, from people who believe that the existing system can serve our needs and needs to be improved in certain ways, the charter school movement and how they do their thing and extending laws and expanding opportunities within the charter school movement, and then private school choice. Those three areas, the information on the conference is at oaknm.org. That's Opportunities for All Kids, New Mexico.org. It's next Friday, September 22nd at St. Pius X High School. This is a free conference. It's also a day-long conference from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. And we hope to see you there. It's going to be very informational, and we're trying to break through some of those silos and get everybody who cares about education in New Mexico working together and at least communicating and bring this information to people, because there's models out there for improving education. We know New Mexico has struggled for many years in education results. Things are not getting better. If anything, they've gotten worse. And we need dramatic action by our elected officials in Santa Fe, but also at the hands of grassroots activists and others who care about getting our kids educated. So it's an all hands on deck kind of situation.
Yeah, and it is free. And let me repeat the website to get all the information. Just OAKNM. That's yep. Opportunity for All Kids, NM.org. And again, that's next Friday. What'd you say, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m.?
Yeah.
Okay, at St. Pius X High School over on the west side. And actually, Paul, that's presented by Rio Grande Foundation, yes?
It is. OAKNM is a project of the Rio Grande Foundation. It's currently headed up by former state rep Rebecca Dow, and she is a real education leader in New Mexico and was while she was in the legislature, somebody who I have a lot of respect for. And yeah, she'll be one of the many panelists, including folks from out of state, from in state. Real diverse crew there coming to talk about a lot of ways that we can improve education outcomes.
And actually, let's educate me and some others. We've been mentioning it, Paul, and talking about, you know, navigating the existing system, you know, charter schools, private schools, parochial schools, homeschools, micro schools. I'm not familiar with that.
That's actually one of the areas where I am less familiar than most. The gist of it is that micro schools got their start during COVID-19, and they're a way that parents basically created innovative solutions to get their kids together to educate them with professional, okay, you know, educators during COVID, and it's extended to now.
Similar to a co-op?
I'm not familiar enough with a co-op. I mean, I know a co-op was a, I think micro schools have some, there is some state funding involved.
Okay.
And, you know, come find out.
Yeah.
It's a panel that I'm very interested to hear more about.
Yeah. OAKNM.org.
Yeah.
And again, that's next Friday. So make sure to go get the details on this free event. All right. So let's jump into some of the topics that Paul's prepared to walk through today. And again, they're available at errorsofenchantment.com. You can go there and see much of what we're going to be talking about. And you know, as promised, we'll jump right into the recent health issue or health, whatever.
Public health emergency.
Public
yeah.
health emergency, whatever. That our governor jumped right into. But, of course, there's been several updates on that since then. I know shortly after it happened, I saw posts from the sheriff, and then recently heard on, you know, comments from the attorney general. And it seems like everyone sees that there's an issue with what she had to say other than her.
You're right. And, you know, I don't want to rehash a lot of what has been already said or talked about on this issue. I'm always looking to bring kind of the insights that people aren't thinking about to these policies. So obviously the governor basically threw a public health order based loosely on the order she continued during COVID-19. She upped it and re-upped it for 2 years plus, and her idea was to eliminate the possession, whether it's by concealed carry or open carry, of firearms in the Bernalillo County. And she has received more pushback on this here in New Mexico and across the country than I've seen really any New Mexico politician receive in 17 years of working here in New Mexico. She's done a great job of putting New Mexico in the spotlight. She's achieved several Babylon Bee mockumentary commentaries. They're, of course, a satire site. They've had several on Lujan Grisham. She's united pro-gun, pro-Second Amendment people with radical left-wing gun grabbers like Representative Ted Lieu of California, who said her order was unconstitutional, even though he's not a big Second Amendment guy. David Hogg, who I would say strongly dislikes the Second Amendment, also says it's unconstitutional. Jacob Candelaria, a former state senator, agreed that it's unconstitutional and put a feeler out for some clients. And, I think Republicans, it's fair to say, across the country and across New Mexico are united, whereas Democrats in her own party are at best split, with legislators and federal members of Congress from New Mexico trying to avoid the issue, and Democrats who actually have to address these issues, like Mayor Keller, because, of course, Albuquerque's in Bernalillo County, and the sheriff of Bernalillo County, another Democrat, all having to essentially tell the governor, sorry, governor, this is unconstitutional. We're not going to enforce it. Now, a lot of that's been talked about, but I think the first thing we need to address is that this is not an anomaly. Now, I question whether this is kind of a coordinated plan among some national Democratic forces and activists. And this is not conspiratorial in any stretch of the word, because people have been talking about how certain politicians, especially governors on the Democratic side of the aisle, plan to use public health emergencies to essentially grab power in certain situations. We talked last month about environmental activists that wanted Joe Biden to declare a national public health emergency on climate change. So this is not some newfangled thing. We've just been waiting for some politician in the United States to do this, and it just so happens to be Michelle Lujan Grisham right here in New Mexico. Now, that is just one feature of this, but I think the other thing now is we have a legislature and potentially both sides of the aisle on this case that could finally, and it's only going to happen if you, the listener, and folks out there get involved and push on this issue, is to reform our public health orders. Now, during the last several legislative sessions throughout COVID and the pandemic and in the wake of it, there was a bill introduced bipartisan by Representative Greg Nybert and a Democrat representative who's no longer in office to limit these orders to 45 days before the legislature has to vote on it and have a final say over whether we remain in a public health order. Well, 45 days is longer than the 30 days the governor even wanted. And so this is not just about a time situation. I am now counseling and talking to folks involved in this process as to limiting the subject matter and what actually constitutes a public health emergency, not just 45 days. Because, you know, if you sit there and say, well, 44 days of a gun ban is A-OK. Now, we know that's not true. In fact, a Biden-appointed federal judge has already put a stay on the governor's actions. So even Biden-appointed judges are pushing back against this. It has been gratifying to see New Mexicans stand up at all levels and all walks of life, all political persuasions against this kind of tyranny.
Yeah, you know, it seems, Paul, tyranny was a good word. Because, when you were saying what defines a health emergency, I mean, you could say, well, that those 10 cows standing in a pasture in Valencia County passing gas, is creating a health emergency. I was happy to see some of what transpired over the weekend. And actually, some of what I thought when I heard it happen was, I mean, you could, this isn't fair because I don't know the intentions, but it felt a little bit like, let's do it. Let's see what we can get away with. And kind of testing the, you know, back to, you know, we had the mandates, we had the whether the mask or the, you know, getting the shots. And it was like, let's see what we can make people do. It just kind of felt a lot like that.
Totally agree. And these kinds of trial balloons are by no means a new thing. I think the governor may, you know, she said, well, I'm no longer running for re-election. Or maybe she thought she would have enough support to run for the U.S. Senate down the road. I don't think she feels like her political career will end when she leaves the governor's office. But maybe she felt like there would be a different reaction. I don't really know. And it's one of the things that really baffles me about her. You know me, Steve. I'm all about communication. Like, yeah. Even my wife would agree that I try to communicate with her, which sometimes gets really difficult because it involves all kinds of juggling of different schedules and whatnot. But, you know, you're the governor of a state of over 2 million people. You're pushing on some very controversial and delicate policies. And I'm not just talking about this gun issue, but during the last legislative session, you know, we've talked about the tax bill and some of the ideas that were bandied about to deal with the surplus and use that for the benefit of New Mexicans. Regardless of the policies, it was clear that the governor had not had basic conversations with people in the legislature as to what she was hoping to see out of that particular piece of legislation. It is clear from her from the reaction that she got from Mayor Keller to Bernalillo County Sheriff to even some legislators, Joe Cervantes, senator from Las Cruces, he's one that came out against it. The governor did not consult with her political base and political allies on this. It strikes me as malpractice of a most basic sort that she would not do that. So it's very unusual and frustrating. It's, I think, a case study of what not to do if you're ever elected governor of any state in the country.
Well, I'll tell you, Paul, you have one of those attributes that I appreciate a lot in people. You don't have to be around Paul and wonder what he's thinking. you'll hear, and I really do appreciate that. And a way for our listeners to know and to consider some of the things you're thinking and talking about is to go to errorsofenchantment.com. You'll see all kinds of information there. And actually, we're going to take a quick break and come back. You know, and I do want to real quick, I think we're going to talk about it later in the hour. Like you said, it wasn't just the gun issue. I mean, the EV issue and so many other things.
Right.
You wonder. But anyway, listen, if you just tuned in, we're spending the full hour with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation, riograndefoundation.org. And again, the website for these blogs and articles that we're talking about are found at errorsofenchantment.com. We'll be back with more right after the break on ABQ Connect. Hey, earlier in today's show, I mentioned Remembering the Jesus Movement event happening in Santa Fe tomorrow with Karen Lafferty at the Mosaic Music and Arts Cafe at 5:30. That's north of Cordova Road on Don Diego Road. And she'll be on the show tomorrow. The reason I bring that back up again, another art event is happening later this month, September 21st and 22nd. Fullness, a fine arts event at Hope Evangelical Free Church, Juan de Bow, north of Montgomery. That's Thursday and Friday, September 21st, 22nd at 6:30, both nights. It's a creative arts event that includes original performances, music, dance, other art, and dessert, all created for this event. The public is welcome. It's a free event. Artists are encouraged and invited to participate, but you need to register here in the next few days by September 17th. And artist space is limited. So if you want details on Fullness, go to hopechurchabq.com/fullness. We're in the midst of a conversation with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation, and errorsofenchantment.com is where you'll find much of what we're talking about today. Next on the list, Paul, people are here comes COVID again. Well, I guess it hasn't gone anywhere, but here come, you know, some of the discussion on what we should and shouldn't do, and Are we all prepared to make the decisions we're struggling with here in the last couple of years?
Yeah. You know, so to her credit, ironically, Michelle Lujan Grisham has not taken it upon herself to embrace some of the restrictive policies that she did as governor, you know, during the COVID-19 pandemic and kind of beyond with 2 years of the public health order and masks.
Is that a yet, or do you anticipate that she'll stand by that?
That's an excellent question. I haven't seen any governors of either political party so far really embrace the same policies that we saw during the actual days of COVID-19.
Well, let me say this real quick. Like you said at the beginning, to her credit then,
right?
Because how often do so many, you know, they'll complain about what a politician or a leader is doing, and then when they make the change, you go, oh, what a hypocrite, you know, or whatever. So if it is the case that she's not going to embrace it, yeah, to her credit, we're not going down that road again.
Yeah, but it is worth, especially as we see, you know, the previous conversation about the public health order on guns. You know, we do not at the Rio Grande Foundation forget, especially as a parent, and that's the first issue I have and continue to have had and have with her public health orders under COVID-19 is that she locked the schools for over a year. She locked kids out of their classrooms for that time period. And it's one of the reasons, I think one of the big ones, why New Mexico, which already struggled educationally, dropped to the very bottom of the education list. So she wasn't alone. A lot of other states did this, and it's proving to have been a total disaster. Generally speaking, you hear widespread agreements on both sides of kind of the political aisle, not so much politicians, but people who may have been for some COVID lockdowns or policies tend to agree that locking kids out of school was not necessary and not a good policy. So that's the one. Secondly, and this was more of an early issue, but it obviously reared its ugly head throughout the pandemic and the governor's policies. Early on, Rio Grande Foundation called into question the idea that the virus could spread at Jericho Nursery or a mom-and-pop nursery around town as opposed to a Home Depot or a Lowe's with the very same stuff, especially given that this was March and people are getting plants in the ground. And what better way to get some exercise and fresh air and vitamin D in a pandemic than plant some plants?
Now, I've slept since this. And I don't recall, was Nancy Pelosi going shopping privately exclusive to there, or did that happen here in New Mexico with politicians?
Lujan Grisham did go get some fancy jewelry during the pandemic.
Where I couldn't go.
Right.
Okay.
I believe Pelosi may have done it. A lot of politicians, Gavin Newsom in California, famously had dinner at the French Laundry. And that's, so, you know, other kind of hypocrisy with regard to businesses is the restaurant closures and their ridiculous out, quote unquote, I using my air quote hands right now, outdoor dining. I say that because all they did was shut their doors and then put a tent out and back. That isn't science-based in any way, shape, or form. Masks, of course, there are studies on both sides of the aisle on masks, but you know, I believe that for these kinds of interventions, forcing people to wear masks in their place of work, grocery stores, kids in school, you need some ironclad evidence. You know, science isn't just about, well, maybe there's some reason that it works on one side of the aisle or not. No, you need some really good evidence before you start imposing things like mask mandates on people.
And psychologically, I mean,
absolutely.
It was a real issue, especially
absolutely.
With kids. And I have to wonder what kind of PTSD still exists from those mandates for masks for kiddos, for everyone. But I specifically think of the kids, you know.
Yeah, exactly. The kids in particular, again. And my kids, unfortunately, were wearing masks in school for part of the time after they had returned from homeschool. So I was impacted by that as well. The vaccines, and again, masks, if you want to wear them, that's fine.
Yes, agreed. Agreed.
I don't see them as effective, but if you want to wear them for whatever reason, that's your right. Except for possibly in banks, and that's a whole different issue because
there was a time when you walk into not just a bank, a business, wearing a mask that you could not be identified. We call it a DLR, doesn't look right, and is cause for concern, but you have to wonder how many criminals took advantage of that during that time and continue.
I think people do continue to take advantage of that, and some businesses have finally decided to again ban mask wearing in certain crime, high crime areas, and that's another kind of nuanced separate issue. Vaccines as well, there's nothing that I'm going to say on one side or the other. You can get vaccinated, you don't have to get vaccinated. It should be your choice.
Yeah.
It should always be your choice. This is not, polio vaccine or something else that we make sure kids have before they go to school. And it's got, dozens or even, 50 years of effectiveness behind it. These were all experimental. Nobody should ever have been mandated to get a vaccine as a requirement for their job.
And there was absolutely duplicitous thoughts and saying, my body, my choice, at that time, and one way with abortion, it was one way. And with the, I even hesitate to call it a vaccine because,
fair enough. Therapeutic perhaps.
Yeah. DNA adjustment, whatever, RNA adjustment, whatever you want to call it. Anyway.
And, finally, being fit and engaging in physical activity is something that was obviously a critical component of warding off COVID-19 if and when you got it. And the governor closed off numerous options for healthy activity. I've already mentioned garden centers, but she closed golf courses for a while, gyms and other public areas where people can get a workout in.
How come our homes
were limited?
Our homes weren't closed.
Well, yeah, and people bought gym equipment in droves at that time and set up home gyms, which is great, but they shouldn't have to do that, and there were shortages of the issue.
Yeah. All right. Hey, we're up against the break again. We're in the midst of running through some local issues that matter to you, as brought to your attention by the Rio Grande Foundation and Paul Gessing's blogs at errorsofenchantment.com. We're going to continue our conversation. First, though, a quick break. We'll be right back on ABQ Connect. We're in the midst of a conversation with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. And hey, Paul, earlier we mentioned some of the policies and directions our governor's gone over the last several years and months. And as it occurs to me, was something, is there a timeline for when you should really be expected to get into an EV vehicle similar to what California is pushing?
Yeah, the Environmental Improvement Board, which is an unelected body appointed in New Mexico by the governor, in this case, Lujan Grisham. She loves not dealing with elected bodies. For all of the talk you hear about democracy and especially one party, complaining about President Trump and his actions, which I'll leave it up to the listeners to determine those. But I will say unequivocally that public health orders of the like that she has imposed, but not just that, also her imposition or attempts to impose an EV mandate. And by attempts, I mean, she's got one that's already baked in, that's already been approved, that's going to take effect next summer. It is only a 7% mandate for EVs sold in New Mexico, or 7% of vehicles sold to be EVs, electric vehicles.
Is that per dealership or overall? Or?
On a whole holistic basis, 7% sold in total. So I recently had a conversation with Todd Myers, a friend of the Rio Grande Foundation. He works on environmental policy up in Washington State. And they're another state that's doing this kind of thing. And he asked them for, you know, how they are going to enforce this. So what you're going to have is a cap and trade style system in place where the dealers that are able to achieve their threshold, or in a case of a Tesla company, you're going to have credits for the EVs that you sell above 7% starting out. If the governor gets her way, 43%, and then those credits will be sold to those dealers that cannot achieve those goals. So it's a bit of a cap and trade system here in New Mexico that the governor is setting up. So what's going on is that 7% is kind of just the starting point that's already in place. The governor very much wants to impose far larger numbers of electric vehicles on us. And hearings have been scheduled for mid-November of this year. So kind of squeezed in between the elections and Thanksgiving time. There will be hearings right here in Albuquerque in person of the Environmental Improvement Board on this issue. Now, they are governor appointed, but I believe that they can be pushed, pressured, and prodded not to just go down the path of EV mandates. I believe that there are significant pressure points that can be brought to bear by highlighting who they are and highlighting the myriad problems with forcing electric vehicles down New Mexicans' throats. They don't work very well in rural areas. They are damaging to the roads because of their weight. They don't pay gas taxes to maintain those roads. There are serious concerns about a number if you have too many EVs in parking garages, the weight that could impact those garages and cause them to collapse. There are numerous issues. And one post I made recently at Heirs of Enchantment just runs through a laundry list of dozens of issues with EVs, charging stations, and the fact that they're too spread out, they're too slow, they don't always work, et cetera, et cetera. And they're subsidized by the government, in this case, generally the federal government, sometimes the state. But that all translates into a second story in which the NPR actually looked at and had a reporter embedded on a recent trip by Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm, who was out doing a trip with kind of a cavalcade of her advisors and people with the Biden administration, traveling from Charlotte, North Carolina to Memphis, Tennessee. Now, there's further distances here in New Mexico that people travel. I mean, Charlotte, North Carolina to Memphis is a fairly long trip, but it's not much different than traveling from Farmington to Hobbs. The issue came about because, among other things, and I'm going to quote briefly directly from the story, that they went to charge some of these vehicles and found that one of the station's four chargers was broken and others were occupied. So an energy department staffer tried parking a non-electric vehicle by one of the working chargers to reserve a spot for the approaching Secretary of Energy. That did not go well because it was hot down in area of the South.
And that sounds a lot like what we were talking about earlier. Okay for me, but not
exactly.
For
the... That's cheating, first and foremost, yes. And so a family with a crying baby on a hot day was not able to get to the charger to keep their car going. They were so upset by the situation that they called the police on the Secretary of Energy.
And rightly so.
And rightly so.
I don't know the details, but it sounds like an infant was endangered.
Yeah, absolutely. It just shows you that it's one thing for your family or you individually to go on a road trip with an EV and try to manage the wide open spaces of New Mexico. But even the Secretary of Energy, complimented as she was by a handful of EVs plus traditional gas-powered vehicles running interference for her group, still ran into serious problems with those EVs. So the NPR story is linked at Heirs of Enchantment. It's worth a read.
Well, and not to mention the fossil fuel used to produce those EVs that they were taking on their caravan.
Yeah, there's electricity being produced for them, and that had to come from somewhere. So a few quick notes. One is that my organization, Rio Grande Foundation, has joined something called the Save Our Cars Coalition. You can find out at savecars.org more about them. It's a national movement of people and organizations, well, organizations that are, you know, organizing to push back against this clear government overreach. Finally, H.R. 1435, the Preserving Choice in Vehicle Purchases Act, has been introduced in Congress. And the idea is to ensure that states do not cut off opportunities for people to buy the vehicles that make the most sense for them. This is, of course, federal legislation, so it's got many challenges in order to get over the finish line, not the least of which are the U.S. Senate and Joe Biden. But the fact is that it is incredibly harmful for the government, whatever level it is, to start telling you what kind of vehicle you should or should not be able to drive. And it's something that we are going to fight tooth and nail here in New Mexico because that is our home turf, and we're going to fight this governor on it.
All right. Well, before we go to a break, Paul, let's quickly go through one of your other blogs that you posted at errorsofenchantment.com, and some of which talked about the passing of former Governor Bill Richardson, which, by the way, kudos to the United New Mexico team. I was at a game that day, or you know, and provided a moment of silence, very honorable and respectful. And I appreciated, you know, for me, in spite of the fact that politically totally did not line up with the guy, he did serve in more ways than one for several years.
Well, I would say that Bill Richardson was much more to my way of thinking among Democrat elected politicians than the current governor. And quite frankly,
and at the time, I thought he was so far left.
Well, he was in certain ways, but it's worth appraising. First and foremost, when Bill Richardson was in Congress, he worked with then President Bill Clinton to get the North American Free Trade Agreement passed. And I'm a free trade guy. NAFTA wasn't perfect, but it was just a unique moment in time, especially given the way both parties now are kind of skeptical on free trade, that you had a prominent Democrat working with the President of the United States, also a Democrat, to pass a free trade agreement. So that's a unique thing that he did as a congressman. Now, as a member of the, you know, as the governor of New Mexico, he was first and foremost pro-gun. He was endorsed by the NRA twice, which that is something that you don't see hardly at all nowadays. But he led New Mexico from 2003 to 2011. He enacted alongside the Democrats in the legislature at the time a very solid pro-growth economic policy of tax reduction, taking our top income tax rate from 8.2 to 4.9, reducing capital gains taxes. And overall, Bill Richardson believed, you could tell just from his action in growing New Mexico and doing so broadly through the private sector. Now, that resulted in our personal incomes in New Mexico growing. We were 47th before Richardson. We ended up 42nd after those cuts were implemented. That's not to say that I agree with everything Richardson did. He foisted the heavily subsidized boondoggle known as the Rail Runner Express on us. He also got the spaceport built and at taxpayer expense, which remains very much in question. Yes, Virgin Galactic is finally doing their tourism launches, but that took over a decade to come to fruition after the facility opened, and Virgin Galactic's finances are highly, highly open to question, and their stock prices continue to fall as they continue to launch, which indicates that their business model may be flawed, which, you know, they seem to have the technology, at least they can launch, but how do you make a profit? How do you build investor equity is a separate question. Finally, Richardson implemented the modern film subsidy program at a rate of 25%. So under Richardson, we were paying out 25 cents on the dollar to Hollywood filmmakers to come and film here. Now that's up to 40%.
But wait, there's more.
Yeah, we're up to 40%. Of course, they're all on strike now. So we're saving money on that in New Mexico. And It's not good policy. It never made any sense. There were a few other things he tried to do. He threw economic development subsidies at Eclipse Aviation for a time. They were really the hot and even, dare I say, sexy company that was manufacturing planes, jet planes here in Albuquerque, as well as Schott Solar, which, you know, we've been down that path before with regard to solar manufacturing companies. Now we're going down the path again with potentially $600 million in subsidies for Maxeon, which is going to come and build a plant out in Mesa del Sol. So Richardson certainly relied more on government incentives and corporate welfare than I would like. Did some things like the Rail Runner that made no sense whatsoever. But he was trying to run for president from a relatively small out-of-the-way state, and I think he was trying to throw everything at the wall to see how it would work out, but he the corruption ultimately got him. He lost out on being in the Obama administration due to the pay-for-play scandals that were under his administration, and that really, I think, torpedoed his chances for higher office outside New Mexico. Unfortunately, we tend to be okay with, or seemingly okay with, a large group of people, perhaps a plurality, are, you know, accepting of the kind of corruption that we saw during his administration and continue to see in New Mexico politics. And that didn't fly for Obama in his administration, surprisingly enough.
Well, listen, if you want to read more on the blog that Paul posted on that, you can go to errorsofenchantment.com. We're in the midst of a full hour with Paul from the Rio Grande Foundation, and we'll continue and bring us to the top of the hour right after this on ABQ Connect. All right, wrapping up our conversation with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. And Paul, we got about 5 minutes, so I want to make sure we cover a couple of the other blogs that you've posted at errorsofenchantment.com, one of which makes it clear that a couple of New Mexico senators not happy at all with some of the speakers at New Mexico State University.
Yeah, and it's not just a handful of senators, although their names are Carrie Hamblin and Bill Sewells. It is also a slew of other elected officials, including Representative Angelica Rubio, who represents Doniana County, parts of it at least, the mayor pro tem, several city councilors in the Las Cruces area, and county commissioners as well.
So what was their concern?
They believe that conservatives should not be invited to speak on New Mexico State University's campus. Now, before I talk about that conservative speaker, I will say that there's often discussion of a lot of things that people don't like that are not First Amendment violations, but a bunch of elected officials calling on a university funded in part by their own, you know, efforts through our tax dollars is a blatant and direct violation of the First Amendment. So let's just clear that up. So Democrats in New Mexico, not so good on the First Amendment, not so good on the Second Amendment. And in this case, the politicians called on New Mexico State not to invite or re-invite people like Matt Walsh. Matt Walsh is a commentator at the Daily Wire, which is a national news and political commentary website. Ben Shapiro is, in my estimation, the top line guy over there, very well known. But Matt Walsh has risen in prominence, especially with his documentary that he created called What Is a Woman, in which he traveled around the globe talking to relevant people to figure out if they could explain what a woman meant as opposed to, you know, transgender male or, you know, those kinds of different, you know, kind of approaches that in our lost civilization, it seems like an increasing number of people are unwilling to explain or delineate exactly what a woman means or what it means to be a woman. So Walsh has definitely risen in prominence. He was a speaker back in April at NMSU, and that was apparently not amusing to a lot of very left-wing progressives down in Doniana County.
And to go read that complete article, again, go to errorsofenchantment.com. Rio Grande Foundation, of course, Paul, representing Rio Grande Foundation and Errors of Enchantment. But RGF has been out and getting busy doing things out in public.
Yeah, we're always out in public, but this last few weeks has been extremely busy. I was down in Socorro recently doing a talk to the Republican group down there. Don Tripp, the former New Mexico Speaker of the House, was at the meeting, took a quick picture with him. He is doing very well. Also, couldn't resist, but I went to the McDonald's. I was enjoying some fine dining down in Socorro, and they happen to have the charging stations there. These are Tesla charging stations. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, about 8 or 9, maybe 10 Tesla charging stations down there for electric vehicles. I did happen to see a real live electric vehicle being charged in Socorro, but that was just one Tesla there. It was a wide open field for those wanting to get their charging done near the Socorro McDonald's. And of course, we were at the Folds of Honor event, and I spoke this week at a panel discussion organized by Judge James Browning, a federal judge here in Albuquerque at UNM's Law School. He put it together, and I was one of the panelists talking about homelessness in Albuquerque, solutions to homelessness, and had people of various philosophical approaches on that panel. I was kind of the conservative, but Brad Day is a prominent guy recently here in Albuquerque. He's been focusing on the safe spaces effort, and then there's a few people from the city and others. Unfortunately, I don't think there are any recordings of that event. You can find a lovely picture at heirsofenchantment.com, though.
All right. Well, and Paul, I want to thank you for being here with us today. I do want to say before we go, back in the 70s, I had an EV. You remember the little Mattel, kind of like Hot Wheels? You had a little battery pack, and you plugged it into your car and pushed. You had to hold the button down. I'm wondering, you know, how long before people have to stand at the, you know, you got to hold the pump while you put the gas in. How long before you got to push the button and hold it while you charge your car?
Well, you know, the easier approach is just to get a pedal and have people pedaling to get the electricity going. Or you could just pedal the car like Fred Flintstone, perhaps. That's cut out the middleman approach.
There you go. And that sounds like a healthy alternative. Well, Paul, thanks again for your time. Look forward to next month. And again, heirsofenchantment.com. Rio Grande Foundation, it's nonprofit. Go to the website at riograndefoundation.org, and you'll find a donate button there if you care to support the efforts of Paul Gessing and the team at the Rio Grande Foundation. Thanks for your time, and join us tomorrow on ABQ Connect, our Friday financial update, Heritage Foundation update, Karen Lafferty, and another art event happening we'll let you know about. Thanks for listening.